Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Perhaps the activists of unrestrained government think there's some compromise to be had that allows the spending binge to survive. Ladies and gentlemen, know this. We will do no such thing. We have not come all this way to compromise on the will and the birthright of our people.
Speaker John Boehner, Speaker of the House, talking yesterday, and welcome to Monday. A federal government shutdown could come by Friday. Friday is the day by which Congress must pass a bill known as a continuing resolution. So when you hear them talking on TV about the CR, it's the continuing resolution, which keeps money flowing into the various departments for the current fiscal year, which runs through September. As you probably heard, Speaker Boehner and his majority in the House are calling for $60 billion in immediate cuts to almost everything except Medicare, Social Security, and the military. President Obama and the Democrats who control the Senate think that's way over the top and more about ideology than the budget anyway. A forecast by Goldman Sachs to its clients last week said a one-week shutdown would cost the U.S. economy $8 billion. Goldman's analysis says the $61 billion in cuts the Republicans would want altogether would cost the overall economy 2% of GDP as a rate between now and September. Republicans dispute those Wall Street numbers, however. So is there going to be a government shutdown this Friday? Let's ask Tegan Goddard, the creator of the CQ Roll Call Political Wire. Tegan, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me this morning.
Can you start by describing what a government shutdown would actually mean? I suspect President Obama will still report for work somewhere in the White House, and the Army will still defend the country if someone attacks us. What would actually shut down?
Well, it's kind of like one of the, if you look back to when the last time it happened during the Clinton administration, you know, the first things that were shut down are, it's really inconveniences for a lot of people, and certainly the biggest inconvenience is for federal employees, who many of whom their paychecks stop. But if you're in Washington, and you'll find, you know, you'll find landmarks closed. You'll find it harder to get things done. You'll find your checks coming late, things like that. And so it's really the situation that it becomes an inconvenience for a lot of people. I think that's the first wave, and we've really never had a shutdown that lasted, many weeks or months. So, you know, that's when it actually starts getting pretty dicey for people.
Would recipients get their food stamps and unemployment and Social Security checks?
Most likely those would end up coming late is what most estimates are in terms of what would happen. But, you know, fortunately, we've not had a whole lot of experience with these types of government shutdowns, so we don't entirely know how they plan out, because obviously things have changed in the last 20 years.
Could veterans with medical problems still go to VA hospitals? Would the mail get delivered? Would passport applications be processed?
I think what would happen is a lot of things would slow down. Obviously, I don't think that there would be a problem with veterans getting medical care or things like that. But certainly passport applications, you know, government checks coming, a lot of that would be delayed.
Would oil companies and ethanol makers stop getting their subsidies? Just kidding.
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Do you know about this forecast by Goldman Sachs to its clients that I mentioned, saying a one-week shutdown would cost the U.S. economy $8 billion and the full $60 billion in proposed cuts passed by the House could cost, or I guess it's $60 billion passed by the House could cost 2% of GDP?
Yeah, it was an interesting report last week that was meant for its clients, and it was leaked, originally reported by ABC News. The interesting point about that, and that's something that nobody's really talked about here, is that if $61 billion in cuts were to lead to a 2% reduction in GDP annually, by some estimates, that would actually push the U.S. economy back into recession. And so that's really, you know, the calls, that, at least on the Democratic side right now, are that cuts could conceivably push the economy into another recession. We'd have the double dip recession that many people have feared.
How much do Republicans dispute that Wall Street estimate? Because, of course, Republicans would generally say tax cuts and government spending cuts are good for economic growth, at least in the long term.
Well, you know, I think it's a question of who's buying products in the economy, right? And so you have a situation where the government has, at least since the Obama administration took over through the economic stimulus package and other programs, the federal government has become a much more major consumer in the economy. It's been providing the purchasing power that has been missing as consumers dropped off after the crash in late 2008. So you've got a situation where that needs to be replaced. And Republicans argue that if you were to make tax cuts and you were to put that money back in the hands of regular taxpayers, that they would actually replace that spending mechanism. Now, yeah, obviously it's a very short period of time, but if you look what happened late last year when the Bush tax cuts were extended, and certainly moving into 2011 when the payroll taxes were suspended, for the short period of time. Now, theoretically, that would make a difference in terms of consumer spending. We only have 1 month of data, but we already see consumer spending actually dropping off and not increasing, even though theoretical incomes of most Americans have gone up, and are at least projected to go up on the basis purely of the payroll tax cut.
In other words, you're saying the statistics argue that the stimulus was actually stimulating the economy?
I think that's beyond dispute, really. I mean, I know that politically people love to dispute it because there's a ideological difference here. But clearly, with the government intervening in the economy and spending more money, that was a major stimulus to the U.S. economy. And that without that, the economic situation over the last 2 years would have been worse.
So House Republicans have now proposed a short-term compromise that I read may be of interest to the Senate Democrats to avoid a government shutdown on Friday, involving $4 billion in cuts that President Obama was proposing anyway for the next fiscal year. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so we have a situation where the government shutdown that you alluded to that could be coming as soon as Friday seems to have not necessarily been averted, but has been at least delayed. There's been at least a short-term agreement right now to $4 billion in cuts in return for a two-week extension. What you have is a situation politically where both sides have really blinked here. You've got the Democrats agreeing to the $4 billion in cuts that the Republicans have proposed. But actually, when you look at the numbers, the Republicans have essentially agreed to cuts that President Obama already proposed in his budget that was widely panned several weeks ago. So you've got a situation where both sides are kind of posturing, but they both blinked. I think you there's a lot of wariness over who might be blamed politically for a government shutdown. You have a poll this morning that came out from the Hill newspaper in Washington, which says it's pretty much the blame would be widely spread around, pretty equally between Democrats and Republicans or both parties. So it's not clear, at least politically, where the blame for a shutdown would fall. What was interesting is last week is that former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, who obviously led Republicans into the shutdown during the Clinton administration, he argued in an op-ed that the shutdown would actually not hurt Republicans this time, and he's urging them to stand firm and to, if a shutdown is necessary, to stand firm, and that it will not hurt them politically, as many people think it did the Republicans the last time it happened.
But let me play you another clip of Speaker Boehner from yesterday, where he talks about this compromise as kind of one slice at a time of government spending reductions. And tell me if you think his tone here regarding a possible government shutdown is more similar to or more different from what we heard from Newt Gingrich in 1995.
They won't eat the whole loaf at one time. We'll make him eat it one slice at a time. The American people want government to stay open, but they want it to spend less money. And we don't need to shut down the government to accomplish that. We just need to do what the American people are asking of us.
So is he the Newt Gingrich of 2011, or is he trying to be sort of the kindler, gentler Newt Gingrich?
I think, Brian, that's a great way of putting it. What's clear here, even though I think both sides have blinked in the short term in getting what looks like there's going to be a two-week deal to avert a shutdown for the next 2 weeks. I think if you look at it longer term, I think Republicans have actually won this debate about cutting spending, because really it's just a matter of how much spending are we going to cut. And Democrats, you know, the onus now is on Democrats to come up with that number and to figure out what is acceptable. And so I think that this initial deal is just more indication that that first slice that has been agreed to, that Speaker Boehner is correct here, and that the Republicans do have the edge. The other thing driving this edge, of course, is the fact that there are a handful of moderate Democrats in the Senate who are up for re-election in 2012 and who really, in many ways, side with the idea that government spending has run out of control and that the deficit is an increasing problem, and that their re-election chances are hinged to showing some progress on that. So I think that in many ways, Speaker Boehner does have the upper hand moving past this two-week averted shutdown.
Before you go, how does the Wisconsin battle influence the politics of a federal government shutdown?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and I think it's actually a great experiment here, because, you know, a lot of people look at this Wisconsin battle and they like to argue that it's about cutting spending in the state of Wisconsin, and that this is indicative of the spending problems that states have, or the budget problems that states have, you know, that are tied to these unions. And then you look at the other side of the argument, and this is all about this right of collective bargaining. But in reality, the entire showdown that we're seeing in Wisconsin, and that we're seeing in to a lesser degree in other states, or at least a less visible degree in other states, this is all about politics. I mean, this is all about who has the upper hand in these elections, and certainly in the elections coming up into 2012. If Republicans looked back at the 2010 elections, and as well as they did across the country, they believe that there are 6 to 8 governorships that they should have won. And the reason that they didn't win those was that the unions were very effective at spending for the Democrats and at getting out the vote for Democrats. And so this is an opportunity, at least politically, for Republicans to try to hurt the Democrats politically. And the Democrats, it's kind of awakened. It's awakened Democrats recognizing that this is a constituency that they need to support and maintain. And so it all comes, you know, I think all of this comes down to politics. Just as in Wisconsin, this is not really about the issues that everyone's talking about. It's not about the state budget, and it's not about collective bargaining as a right. When you look at the federal level, we're talking about really a minor slice of the budget here. This is not really, this is not about the federal budget deficit. This is about political posturing as we head into 2012.
So from the Special Pleading Department, give me a quick take on how it looks politically for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The House bill would eliminate all funding. Even the Gingrich House couldn't actually get that through when they tried in 95.
Yeah, I can't speak to it specifically, but I would not think the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is in a great position right now. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. But the spending cuts that are being talked about, the funding for public radio comes directly from the areas that people are talking about spending. You know, when I talk about it, this is not really about the major debt issues. You know, the real budget problem for the United States and the real problem, moving forward is on these entitlement programs and how much of a, increasing part of the budget they're about. And so this is all a smokescreen. People are really not talking about what's driving the real, debt problems of the country going forward.
And yet $60 billion or something approaching it may be cut in the current fiscal year. So we will have to see what happens going forward on all of these things, including the possibility of a government shutdown this Friday if they can't dot the I's and cross the T's on this possible two-week agreement. Tegan Goddard, the creator of CQ Roll Call's Political Wire, thank you for coming on with us.
Thank you, Brian.
And the problems are local, of course, as well as Governor Cuomo and the New York State Legislature grapple with the $10 billion budget deficit in the Empire State. And the governor, as you may know, created a Medicaid redesign team because Medicaid is just so much of the New York State budget at this time. So when we come back, we will talk to two members of that Medicaid redesign team, which has now put forth 79 recommendations. They are controversial. Many of them are. And our two guests are not going to agree on all of these. In fact, one of them, Assemblyman Richard Gottfried, abstained. He did not vote for his own team's Medicaid redesign because of the impact he says it would have on New Yorkers' health care. So stay with us and we'll talk to two members of Governor Cuomo's Medicaid redesign team, and we'll take your phone calls if you work anywhere in the healthcare system or otherwise affected at 212-433-WNYC. Stay with us.